With his job as governor at stake, Ted Strickland has been going after his Republican opponent hard. First, Ted Strickland blasted John Kasich for his ties to Wall Street. Then he went after Kasich's congressional record.
So while he was walking over hot coals to take a $100 tax rebate from a minimum wage worker, he wouldn't so much as lift a finger to keep some of the richest, most unpatriotic Americans from slithering off with more than $7 billion in ill-gotten tax giveaways. And so I ask, Congressman Kasich, whose side are you on?
Meanwhile, John Kasich has been lying low, doing a few interviews and preferring to get his message out through web videos.
It's been nothing but smear and negative campaigning since we got to Election Day, and frankly, it follows up about a year of them taking pokes at me. You know, I consider it kind of sad and kind of pathetic. When you run for office, you ought to have something good to say about yourself. And if you don't have anything good to say about yourself, you know what? Maybe you ought not to run. That's not the best of American politics, to engage in smear. But look, we're big people here. We knew it was coming. We're going to be fine.
With jobs being issue number one and issue number two and three in this campaign, both sides are trying to blame the other for Ohio's economic troubles. Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann this morning. During this hour, we'll look at the governor's race and other races on the fall ballot. If you'd like to join this discussion, please call us at 292-8513. We are particularly interested in independent or undecided voters because you likely will decide these races. Our first guest is Peter Brown. He is the assistant director of the Quinnipiac University Polling Center, which conducts periodic polls on Ohio politics. Peter, welcome to All Sides.
Good morning.
First to the governor's race. For Ted Strickland, it's a good news, bad news situation, according to your latest poll. He leads John Kasich, but his approval rating is below 50%.
Well, that's correct. And here's what the way to look at this race. Firstly, it's the summer. Very little happens in terms it happens in terms of moving public opinion over the summer. The governor's race, according to Quinnipiac's July poll, is the same place where the governor's race was in its May poll and its April poll. They're roughly the same. There's been very little movement, and that's not surprising. The governor has a lead, and that's, you know, it's always better to be ahead than behind. The bad news for the governor is that when voters are asked about his job performance, he's slightly underwater. And when they're asked about his handling the economy and the state budget, which are the two big issues in the campaign, because that's how jobs translate into economic activity, then his numbers are even less satisfactory in the eyes of Ohio voters. What he's got going for him is he has a strong base, but there's a rule in politics that incumbents who don't poll over 50% often are in trouble when you get to Election Day. He's basically been stuck in the mid-40s. Now, it's worth remembering that President George Bush got reelected in 2004 with a job approval rating in the mid-40s. So winning is, in that situation, is not impossible, and it can happen. On the other hand, it's not an optimum situation.
Why haven't – I mean, I know it's summertime and people really aren't paying attention really until, you know, the end of summer or Labor Day even. But I'm surprised the polls haven't moved at all really since, you know, the end of the winter, even despite all of the bad economic news and things like that. I mean, why haven't they moved at least a little bit?
Well, because a lot of voters don't start paying attention until you get closer to the election. They've got better things to do. You know, there was no primary in on the governor's race, so, you know, there wasn't any real reason to focus. And traditionally, voters, you know, a lot of voters don't pay attention until you get closer. The other thing is that, frankly, the economy being what it is and being such a dominant issue, the real question that undecided voters will face in Ohio is Ted Strickland doing as good a job as we think he can do? And they don't know yet, candidly. They give him negative ratings on the economy, but that's not surprising. The economy's not doing very well. The question that Strickland is trying to put in voters' mind is, did I do as well as could be expected given the circumstances?
And that's the message. That's the message he's trying to get out is, look, right. You know, this isn't – I mean, yeah, the economy is bad. We've lost 400,000 jobs. That's a fact. You can't get around that. But it's not my fault. It's Wall Street. It's trade policies by the Bush administration. It's the national and worldwide recession. That's the message he's trying to get out there.
That's correct. And Mr. Kasich Kasich is basically will be trying to say, you know, anybody could do better. He doesn't deserve a second chance.
With 4 months to go before the election, 52% of the people you asked still don't know enough about John Kasich to make a decision. At what point does that get kind of late in the game that more than half don't know enough about him?
Oh, I would expect that those numbers will decrease. And you know, by October, it'll be a relatively small percentage. But by then, Ohio television viewers will have been inundated with television ads, not just for the governor's race, but the Senate's race, and also some of the congressional races and local races.
So having half the people don't know enough about you on the 4th of July is not a big concern.
Well, no, it's not. It's a double-edged sword. He still has yet to make a first impression on half the voters. If it's a good impression, he could win. If it's not a good impression, he could lose.
Meanwhile, Ted Strickland...
Voters already know what they think about Ted Strickland. And candidly, re-election races are almost always about the incumbent. Did he do a good job? Did he not do a good job?
And that's why Ted Strickland is going after him hard, you know, attacking his ties, attacking John Kasich's ties to Wall Street, attacking his congressional record, which, according to Ted Strickland, favored CEOs and you know, upper-income folks. He's trying to portray or sort of introduce John Kasich to the voters in a negative light.
Absolutely. And that's also what someone in Strickland's position needs to do tactically. In other words, it is true that the state has lost almost 400,000 jobs. It is true that the national recession has lingered. It is true that there's a real sense of pessimism in the state of Ohio about the economy, not just in Ohio, but what we're talking about here is obviously mm-hmm. Ohio. And so what Strickland's trying to do in the voters' minds is get them to think, well, I may not like Ted Strickland, but I'm going to like this new guy a lot less. That's essentially the strategy. And it's not a unique strategy. Mm-hmm. That is traditionally what incumbents try to do, especially when they're in situations like Strickland is, where he's kind of in the middle. He could win, he could lose.
And to some degree, your polls show that it's having an effect. John Kasich's unfavorability ratings jumped from 10% in April to 19% in June. That's basically a 9-point jump, but also a doubling of his unfavorability rating.
It is a 9-point jump, and obviously it's having some effect. But it's also, frankly, you know, elections are to some degree predictable. Democrats will, by and large, be for the Democratic candidate to a large degree, whether it's 75% or 90% is really what matters. Same is true about Republicans. And then the question is, what happens to the independent vote and how it splits?
And your polling shows the independent vote has been pretty much steady through the spring. It's still
right.
Split. Or was it like 17? I forget what it was. 17% undecided?
Yes, and I don't have it in front of me, but yeah. But yes. And the first place you'll get an indication of how the race is going to shake out is looking at independent voters.
Which way are they heading?
Right.
292-8513, if you'd like to join in our discussion, 292-8513. We're talking with Peter Brown. He is the assistant director of the Quinnipiac University Polling Center. They do polling on Ohio and a number of other key battleground states around the country. The Senate race, Lee Fisher, it's really tied. He has a 2 percentage point lead over Rob Portman. You factor in the margin of error, they're basically tied. No incumbent in this race. So what do you make of those numbers?
Well, the thing that's perhaps surprising, and again, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me because I'm not in my office.
Sure.
Is that Mr. Fisher, who has been a figure in statewide politics for two decades, is not that well known. His name ID is not that good. It's better than Portman's, but not hugely so. This is a race in which, you know, neither man has really made much of an impression on the electorate other than those who, you know, again, Democrats who are for Democrat, Republicans who are for Republican. More than the governor's race, this is a race that was likely to be determined by TV and the image that each candidate can present to the voters.
And Rob Portman is on TV, and he has, as it stands right now, a lot more money to spend on TV than Lee Fisher does. According to your polling numbers, 54% of the folks you surveyed do not know enough about Lee Fisher to make a decision, and 66% do not know enough about Rob Portman to make a decision. And it is surprising, 54%. Considering for Lee Fisher, considering he served as lieutenant governor, ran for governor, served as attorney general, it's still a pretty high number.
It is a pretty high number, and that is a little surprised. Not Portman's number is not surprising. He'd only been a congressman. He hadn't been a statewide official or a statewide candidate. But the number on Mr. Fisher is somewhat surprising. Doesn't mean he won't win, but it does mean it's clearly going to be a competitive race. And in both cases, the governor's race and the Senate race may be influenced by factors that have nothing to do with Ohio, i.e. how big the Republican wave will be this year. And you know, there is an expectation nationally the Republicans will have a good year this November, and the question really is how big a year it's going to have. They will have. If they have a big year, then they'll win most of the marginal races. If they don't, then they'll split more evenly.
How different?
One of the truisms about politics is that, despite what your mother told you, law of averages doesn't always work. In landslide elections, the law of averages does not hold. So that in a landslide, think about the states that Barack Obama carried very narrowly in 2008. They're all states that went his way narrowly. North Carolina, Indiana, Virginia. These are states that hadn't been Democratic in some time. And all of them were competitive, and Obama won them all by narrow margins.
How different is Ohio from the other states that you focus on? You focus on Pennsylvania, I believe, and some other states. I mean,
the states I focus on are Pennsylvania, Florida, and Ohio.
Yeah. How unique is Ohio, given those three states?
Well, Ohio is unique in that it is the most pessimistic.
Really?
Voters there are just, you know, are very pessimistic about their economic futures. That's less true in Pennsylvania and Florida. A couple of years ago, Quinnipiac asked this question in one of its polls in Ohio. How likely do you think it is that you or someone in your family will have to move out of state in the next 12 months in search of better economic opportunity? More than a quarter of Ohioans said it was somewhat likely or very likely they would. Now, we don't ask that question in other states. We don't ask it because we don't think that, you know, we're pretty sure that they won't get much of a response. But in Ohio, where people are pessimistic, we got a very large response.
Mm-hmm. How are the incumbents faring in Pennsylvania and Florida, given that they are perhaps less pessimistic than Ohioans?
Well, in Pennsylvania, there are no incumbents on the ballot. Mm-hmm. Arlen Specter got beat in the primary for the Senate. So Joe Sestak is the Democrat who beat him, and he's running against Pat Toomey, who's a former congressman. And that's a very close race.
Mm-hmm.
And the governor's race, the Democratic nominee is Dan Honorato, who is the Allegheny County, that's Pittsburgh area, county executive. And the Republican is Tom Corbett, who's the attorney general. Mr. Corbett, in a poll that Quinnipiac released yesterday, was up 7 points. So that there's less of a sense of economic pessimism in those states.
Mm-hmm.
In Florida, where the unemployment rate, by the way, is higher than it is in Pennsylvania, and I think it's in double digits, which is very unusual for Florida, the governor is not running for re-election. He is running for the U.S. Senate. He was a Republican. He left the Republican Party to run as a third-party candidate because he acknowledged he would lose the Republican nomination. So he's in a three-way fight for the Senate, and polls currently have him slightly ahead. The Senate race is getting most of the headlines, but the governor's race is an interesting race. The Democratic nominee is a woman named Alex Sink, who is the state chief financial officer. And there's a very, very heated battle for the Republican nomination between Bill McCollum, who's a former congressman and is currently the attorney general of Florida. He's being contested by a former businessman named Rick Scott, who has almost unlimited war chest of his own money. And Mr. Scott's ahead. If Mr. McCollum were to lose the primary, it would be another example of how someone who's been essentially a career politician is getting beat.
I guess my question is, given Ohio's pessimism, is it surprising that Ted Strickland's even leading this race by even the slimmest of margin?
It is surprising. Mr. Strickland's probably doing better than some might have expected. He's a good candidate. He's an unusual candidate. He's a Democrat who is a minister.
Mm-hmm.
That really, you know, makes an impression on evangelical voters who are traditionally Republican voters.
A pro-gun minister.
Huh?
A pro-gun minister.
He's a pro. No, I was going to get to that next. He's endorsed by the National Rifle Association. That's another group that doesn't normally endorse Democrats. So Mr. Strickland's profile is an unusual one for a Democratic candidate, and frankly is a help. Those are helpful things. On the other hand, the economy, as you said, is issues 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
And he has and on that issue, he is saddled with the job loss and his promise when he ran for office to turn the Ohio economy around. Clearly, voters don't think he's done that.
Okay. Peter Brown, the assistant director of the Quinnipiac University Polling Center, thanks very much for joining us on All Sides.
My pleasure. Have a good day.
When we come back, we'll talk with two veteran State House reporters to get their takes on the campaign so far when All Sides continues on WOSU NPR News.
What to do in the dog days of summer? Check out the politicians sweating it out, of course. We'll have results from the Alabama runoff, plus Dems worry they may lose the House, and a Republican bemoans the demagogues he thinks cost him his seat. I'm Neil Conan, Ken Rudin, our political junkie, plus Representative Bob Inglis joins us. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation with the Political Junkie begins this afternoon at 2 o'clock, right here on WOSU 820, NPR News. 72 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:22 this morning. Mostly sunny skies today, a high of 88. Clear skies tonight, a low of 69 degrees. Sunshine for Thursday and a high near 90. And then a chance of rain Thursday night and a low right around 68 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher with guest host Mike Thompson continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We are talking Ohio politics this hour, the 2010 campaign. Joining us now are two veteran reporters who are covering these races, Laura Bischoff, State House reporter with the Dayton Daily News, and Joe Hallett, senior editor with the Columbus Dispatch. We welcome your thoughts at 292-8513, 292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We've got a couple of people on the line, and we'll get to you in just a moment. But first, let's chat with our reporters here. Laura, Ted Strickland on the attack. He's shedding his nice guy from Duck Run image, at least a little bit, going after, as he calls him, John Kasich, the congressman from Wall Street. Surprised by this at all?
No, not at all. I think that given that a majority of voters don't really know much about John Kasich, the strategy by the Strickland campaign is to define Kasich for the voters. And now's the chance before Kasich, you know, starts spending a lot of money going up on TV and pushing out his own message. So it's really, I think they're seeing the opportunity to define Kasich and shape him as, you know, the Wall Street bad guy whose policies led to, you know, the downfall of the American economy.
Joe, is it a little early? Because, you know, we just talked to Peter Brown. He says people aren't paying attention. It's, you know, the middle of July. Voters aren't really engaged yet, but yet Ted Strickland is holding these major announcements, as he calls them, where he criticizes his voting record in Congress and before that his ties to Lehman Brothers. Is it premature? Will these messages have a real impact on the race in the summertime?
Well, it might otherwise be early, but the Strickland people see an opportunity, as Laura mentioned, to define John Kasich because he's not well known. And you get varying arguments from both sides as to whether or not it's working. The Kasich people say it's not working, that their polling shows that Ted Strickland is in such a deep hole that the only way he can win is to bring John Kasich down into that hole with him. But they say their polling shows that the numbers aren't moving, these attacks aren't hurting John Kasich. And just anecdotally, you would think that maybe they're right because they're not stupid. If they were hurting them, they would be on the air themselves counterpunching and defending John Kasich. Now, the Republican Governors Association is on the air with what I consider some pretty weak ads about and that quirky little saying that Ted Strickland doesn't get the jobs done. That just rubs me wrong every time I hear it.
I think everyone who's a writer hates that grammatical error.
And then, but on the other side, the Strickland people will note that Kasich's name ID is rising, and at the same time, so are his negatives. So they say that it is working. And after this period of defining or attempting to define John Kasich, we'll probably see Strickland move to a more positive message about his record.
Where is John Kasich? I mean, he has been lying low. I mean, he's been doing some interviews. He pops up. He's sat down with the Dispatch. I don't know if he sat down with you, Laura, at all. And he's, you know, I think he's just lying low. He's not holding. He's not on the air doing ads. The Governors Association is, and there's been no big rallies or campaign speeches that I've seen anyway.
I think he's been sort of out in the field. You know, he'll pop up in small newspapers or on some conservative talk show radio shows. He is doing an event on Thursday in Dayton with Newt Gingrich at Sinclair Community College, and he'll take questions from the press there. Mm-hmm. So, but he has sort of been avoiding, or maybe avoiding is a loaded word, but he has not been as available to the State House press corps as Ted Strickland is.
He is out, I think, primarily trying to raise some money right now. And the campaign does not put out a public schedule, so we have to continually bug them about where he's going to be. I will say that whenever we have needed to talk with John Kasich, they put him on the phone with us, mm-hmm. or tell us where he's going to be so we can catch up with him.
292-8513 if you'd like to join in our discussion, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This really comes down to jobs. I mean, the economy in Ohio, 400,000 jobs, give or take, has been lost since Ted Strickland took office. And it comes down to, who do you blame? Do you blame the Strickland administration and their policies, or do you blame the national recession and Wall Street bankers?
Well, it's interesting. Both sides are blaming the other for the economic crisis and the recession. You can't blame Ted Strickland for job loss. The same set of factors no doubt would have occurred under a Republican governor. By the same token, you can't blame John Kasich for the meltdown of the national economy just because he worked for Lehman Brothers. But there are two issues that are emotionally charged for people, particularly now in a recession when folks are hurting for jobs. So you see the strategy in them.
John Kasich claims as a member of Congress and as a budget committee chair, I believe, he helped create jobs. But yet at Lehman Brothers, he says he wasn't to blame for the collapse or anything else. Will that come back to bite him, the sort of bit of a contradiction there?
I think he wants it both ways. Mm-hmm. I think he wants to portray himself in the best possible light, that as a congressman from Ohio, chairman of the House Budget Committee, that mm-hmm. He helped craft the federal budget and write it, and you know, so that we had budget surpluses for the first time in decades, in forever, and
short-lived.
Exactly, and then, you know, he likes to talk about his private sector experience at Lehman Brothers, that he went out and, you know, helped businesses expand, which and they then created jobs.
Mm-hmm. Ironically, even though he boasts about creating this balanced budget and that President Clinton signed into law, he voted against it, as did every other Republican, because there were tax increases in it. Mm-hmm. And that gives you a little bit of an idea of how he might approach the current budget.
You know, it's interesting, the Kasich campaign, every time Strickland opens his mouth and launches into some major announcement or major speech or whatever, the Kasich campaign's response is that it's attacks and smears. But, you know, a lot of the content of his last speech was a compare and contrast of their voting records in Congress. And I did a story a couple weeks ago about that. And it is a very stark contrast between Strickland and Kasich. Their records on gun votes, NAFTA, minimum wage, what they would keep or cut in a federal budget is very stark. And I think it's not just a smear. It's a legitimate legitimate way of telling voters, this is what I'm about.
Yeah, voters really do have a clear choice. Rhetoric aside and campaign tactics aside, if you look at the policies of these two men, they're very different. And I guess it's a good choice to have between one direction and the other. It's not, you know, two candidates, only minor differences. Let's go to the phones. And John, you're on the air. Go ahead, John.
Well, I just want to say that in Ohio, we're all hurting. We're all hurting out here. And Republicans are hurting and Democrats are hurting. And when I see the National Republican Party coming out against extending unemployment benefits for Ohioans like me, there's no question in my mind I cannot vote for one Republican, not one from dog catcher on up to senator or governor. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, John.
Well, just a note, John Kasich did come out in favor of extending those unemployment benefits. He said Ohio really has little choice because of the state of the economy right now. Meanwhile, other Republicans who normally have supported them, such as Senator George Voinovich, opposed extending the benefits.
They fear the deficit. They worry about the growing federal deficit and what this might do to the federal deficit by extending these unemployment benefits.
Yeah, obviously they're Johnny-come-lately to these concerns about deficits after voting for every Bush budget under the sun, which increased them.
There's also an economic argument that some make that extending unemployment benefits removes an incentive for folks to look for work or perhaps take a job that is not ideal. I'm not sure how that flies if you don't have a job, but that's what an economist might argue.
It may be true, but at the same time, unemployment benefits typically don't pay as much as the job you just left. So, you know, it's not a cakewalk by any means.
And they do tend to have a stimulative effect because unemployed people put every dollar they get in unemployment benefits back into the economy. They don't have the luxury of saving or buying stocks.
Yeah, they're buying food and paying the rent or paying the mortgage and that kind of thing with that money. They're not putting it in a savings account. You'd think anyway. 292-8513, 292-8513 is our number. If you want to join our conversation, we're speaking with Jill Hallett from the Columbus Dispatch and Laura Bischoff from the Dayton Daily News about the campaign 2010. Right now we're focusing on the race for governor. And Rod, you're on the air.
Yes. One thing I might add to what the previous caller said was there's a lot of programs. Right now I'm unemployed myself, and there are programs that I try to take advantage of. Find employment that are being cut back. So far as the race is concerned, I agree that there are, the case of both Strickland and Kasich, that there are things that are beyond their control. So far, Strickland's had to work with a Republican Senate in the state. And, of course, Kasich, like I said, he did make the decision, that he wanted to go to work with Lehman Brothers, but at the same time, he wasn't a directing partner or anything like that. However, both men have records as congressmen. And, you mentioned, one of you mentioned that you had done an article on...
That was Laura.
Laura had done an article on... the two Congress, Strickland and Kasich as Congress people, and perhaps you can direct me to that article, or perhaps give a synopsis of what was in the article.
Okay. Yeah, you ran down a list of the things. Thanks for the call, Rod. Laura, you ran down a list of the things: NAFTA, unemployment, not unemployment, but minimum wage and things like that.
Sure. Kasich voted in favor of NAFTA. Strickland opposed it. The assault weapon ban that was in the Clinton crime bill, Kasich supported it. Strickland, who just got the Buckeye Firearms Association endorsement, opposed it. There were a number of minimum wage votes in which Strickland supported expanding the minimum wage, and Kasich opposed. And then there was a number of ones on college scholarships, loans, grants, making different votes that would make college more affordable, and Strickland generally supported those while Kasich opposed them.
Last week, my colleague and Mark Niket and I sat down with Strickland for about an hour for a story we had in Sunday's paper, and he spoke almost in an alarmist way about a potential Kasich governorship, saying that Kasich would address the budget in an inhumane way and, based on his own record in Congress, would cut. And when you cut $8 billion or try to cut $8 billion out of a state budget, you're, really cutting into human flesh there. So he said that he feels it was almost like a religious kind of awakening that he had to win this race for the benefit of Ohio, and obviously it was pretty hyperbolic. Mm-hmm. And the Kasich people say, we're not the devil and we're not going to kick kids to the curb. But the tone of this race has been set, and it's only going to get uglier.
At the same time, though, Kasich signed a pledge that said he would not raise taxes.
Yeah.
And if you take that off the table when dealing with your budget disaster, that leaves cutting as your only option.
And that's exactly what the point Strickland was trying to make. In addition, Kasich has said that he will phase out the state income tax, and all of us are trying to figure out the math on this. Okay, where do you get 45% of the state's tax dollars if you get rid of the income tax?
Where does he stand on that? Because maybe the early stages of the campaign, or even before he was an official candidate, that was his thing. He wanted to do away with the state income tax, phase it out. He seemed to back off it a little bit, maybe extend the window of the phase out period. Is he back to really saying we need to eliminate this income tax some point?
He really hasn't said how long his phase out period would be, mm-hmm. and he's not been specific on how would he cut the budget, how would he deal with the income tax phase out. He's really been coy with the details of exactly how he would govern.
Yeah, I guess in fairness to him. A lot of people are trying to pin him down on a time frame for phasing out the income tax. I think we were the first to report after a speech in Butler County where he proposed this, and even then he didn't give a time limit. I tried to nail him down right after that speech back in 2009, and he wouldn't be pinned down then. He just said over time, and he continually says we'll release more details as we feel comfortable with them. So he hasn't really put a time frame on phasing out the income tax.
In the same article you mentioned, Joe, you asked Ted Strickland about what his plan was for dealing with this potential $8 billion deficit in the state budget over the next biennium. And he would not say he would raise taxes. I think the quote was, "I'm not stupid," which I thought was very blunt and honest. But so he's been kind of coy, too, Ted Strickland has, about what his plan is to balance this budget.
Well, it's just unfortunate in our political environment, whether it's nationally or in the state of Ohio, that we cannot have rational discussions about taxes because, frankly, the state income tax in Ohio is very favorable. The head of the Ohio Manufacturers Association told me not long ago that the state of Ohio has an income tax rate that is very favorable for business. We just saw some new figures on federal taxes being lower than any point, I can't remember how many years ago. But it's so easy to demagogue taxes, and Ted Strickland knows that the minute he even hints at a tax increase, he'll get killed with it. And it almost has to be part of a balancing the budget mix.
So we don't expect a Walter Mondale moment where he says, "I'm going to raise taxes and so will my opponent, but I'll tell you I will."
Ain't going to happen.
Didn't work out for Walter Mondale in 1984 either. It is coming up on 20 minutes before the hour here on WOSU. We'll continue our discussion about Ohio politics, wrap up our discussion on the governor's race, and then look towards the U.S. Senate and other issues on the ballot in November. All Sides continues in a moment on WOSU NPR News.
Developed by WOSU Public Media and the Columbus Metropolitan Library, ColumbusNeighborhoods.org features over 30 neighborhoods in and around Columbus and allows users to tell their own stories, post their own photos and video, and contribute to the collective story of Columbus. To be a part of this multimedia public engagement project or to learn more, visit ColumbusNeighborhoods.org.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides will be here, and we'll celebrate going out for breakfast in America and Central Ohio with PBS Breakfast Special producer Rick Seaback, along with a couple local food bloggers, a chef, and a restaurant owner from right here in Central Ohio. That discussion begins at 11, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. 74 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:40 this morning. Sunny skies today and a high of 88. Clear skies tonight, a low of 69 degrees. Sunny for Thursday and a high of 90. And then a chance of rain and maybe a thunderstorm Thursday night, a low of 69 degrees. Looking ahead to Friday, there is a chance of rain throughout the day on Friday, cloudy skies, and a high again near 90. On your way home, get perspective on all the day's news with All Things Considered and the business news on Marketplace. It's weekdays starting at 4 on WOSU 89.7 FM, NPR News, and classical music. All Sides with Ann Fisher with guest host Mike Thompson continues on WOSU.
We're talking Ohio politics on All Sides today. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann Fisher. Our guest, Joe Hallett, senior editor with the Columbus Dispatch, and Laura Bischoff, State House reporter for the Dayton Daily News. Let's go to the phones. Pat, you're on the air. Go ahead, Pat.
Yes, what I wanted to talk about was what both of the candidates, you were just talking about how to balance the budget.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think both of them are afraid to attack the public employees union and the teachers unions to say, look, you can't retire anymore at 55 and get 80% of your salary and get health insurance for $50 a month.
This
I think
whole...
if they say, look, you're going to have to contribute a lot more just like the public sector has to. And I think the best solution to both of those is say, look, we're going to take this off the table. We're just going to convert all of these pensions to Social Security, and everybody's going to be on Social Security. And that would take budget problems and headaches and how to balance the budget out of the political realm and make those off the table and make it a lot easier to balance the budget. And they would have to live like everybody else.
Okay. Thank you, Pat. We'll get some take on that. Will that solve the budget situation, the whole – he's talking about the double dipping where somebody retires and then comes back and collects a salary. And it's
– you know, actually double dipping is I think people don't like it. Something doesn't – it just doesn't seem right. But it actually isn't the most costly thing in the pension system. The most costly thing is what he was talking about, that people are allowed to retire early, and then the health care is extremely expensive. The contribution rates for pension systems in Ohio for the public employees ranges from I think the school employees retirement system has the lowest, and the highest is for the highway patrol. I think 28 cents for every dollar that we pay a trooper, another 28 cents goes into the retirement system. So it's a very expensive system. But you can't just, you know, wave a magic wand and convert it to Social Security and it'll solve all the problems.
I agree with Laura, and I would disagree with the caller on one point. I don't think that John Kasich is going to be afraid to tackle the public employee unions, teachers and others. He is not beholden to them. For one thing, they give him almost no campaign funding. Ted Strickland, on the other hand, gets considerable funding from teachers' unions and other public employee unions. Not to suggest, of course, that has anything to do with government action. But,
of course not.
I think that both candidates, though, do realize that there's a growing public resentment and backlash against the compensation packages now for public employees, particularly when so many folks are out of work and they see pretty generous retirement programs and other benefit packages going to public employees and know that they are paying with them for their tax dollars. And meanwhile, they're losing their own compensation packages. The benefits packages for public employees at this point are really unsustainable. And whoever is governor, I think, is going to have to take some steps to reform them.
And education really did not see that many cuts, if any cuts, in the past, in the last budget. It fell mainly to the human service sector. It's higher education and secondary education didn't really see the cuts that other services did. So teachers and superintendents didn't feel the pinch there as much.
Well, I would also say in terms of the public employees union how Strickland has interacted with them, they didn't get an entire pass in the last budget. You know, the 50,000 state employees, roughly, the ones who are in the union and the ones who are under the control of the governor took pay freezes and also 10 unpaid days per year, which amounts to a pay cut. So, you know, arguably they could do more and probably will be asked to do much more in the next budget go around.
And there were a lot of layoffs in the prison system and other human service sectors as well. So
right.
Moving on to the Senate race, this is kind of the opposite of the governor's race. And it is the Republican out there who's on the air. Rob Portman is running ads, introducing himself to voters. I think they're pretty effective ads, talking about his plan, gently criticizing Democrats, but not really attacking too harshly. But he's trying to get his name out there right now.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Mike. They are pretty effective ads. They, you know, Rob Portman will not be seen in a necktie in this campaign. He's got just a, you know, casual shirt on, and he's speaking directly to the camera in factory settings and elsewhere, talking about jobs, and he's got a plan for Ohio. It's a very positive message. He's an appealing candidate, and he's got a ton of money that he can continue to do this through Election Day. He's got $8 million in the bank, and Lee Fisher's only got about $1 million in the bank. The Fisher campaign really, I think, needs to get its act together. It's gone through a succession of campaign managers. It had a primary against Jennifer Bruner that cost money that the Democrats rather would not have spent. So it just is lining up to be a more beneficial turf right now for Rob Portman. And
yet they're still tied, basically tied in the latest Quinnipiac University poll. Is Lee Fisher, he's lying low right now. Is he out just trying to raise money, trying to gear up for the fall?
Yeah, I think he's looking under every rock and couch cushion out there for money for his campaign.
And historically, he's very good at it. I mean, Lee has always done the drudgery, the hard work, dialing for dollars. So he's going to need some help, though, from the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee if he's going to even approach.
Because, like Joe said, Portman's got $8.8 million, I think, in the bank cash on hand as of June 11th. Mm-hmm. And he raised 2.5 or so at the same period that Fisher raised $1 million.
Will there be a lot of national money coming into this race? You'd think, because it's a chance for the Democrats to pick up what is now a Republican Senate seat to offset a loss someplace else.
Yeah, I think there'll be plenty of it, unless, of course, Portman starts to dump a whole bunch of money in and pull away, and the Democrats say, well, we don't know. You know, we have so many other seats to defend or try to pick up in other states. Lee Fisher's been around the block. He's been in many campaigns. He knows how to campaign, and he'll go all out for this thing.
Laura, what's the big issue in this race? In the governor's race, it's the jobs. That's an executive position. You can sort of attack the person or defend your record on creating jobs. Here you have energy policy, you have trade agreements, you've got health care, you've got financial reform. Any of those issues going to bubble up to grab the voters' attention?
I think any of those issues that have a jobs angle will kind of bubble up, like tax credits. When do you give tax credits? Who should get them? And you know, what kind of trade policies do you support that will then create jobs? I think that's, you know, how it's going to go.
In many respects, it's a mirror image of the governor's race. In fact, both sides see a twofer in Ted Strickland and Lee Fisher and John Kasich and Rob Portman. Fisher is trying to try Portman to the Bush policies, economic policies, trade policies. He was Bush's trade representative, budget director. And Portman is trying to tie Fisher to the job losses that have occurred during the Strickland administration.
And he was economic development director as part of his role as lieutenant governor. He's given up that seat recently, but that's what his title was. He was in charge of economic development, which hasn't been that great because of whatever reason. So,
and the Portman campaign keeps bringing that up over and over again. I think it's a Achilles heel for Lee Fisher.
But there is some good news breaking. Over the last 3 months, Ohio has begun to add jobs, and it looks like we're maybe in a recovery. That could break at a good time for the Democrats.
Is there as much of a difference between these two candidates as there is between John Kasich and Ted Strickland when you look at things like NAFTA and, you know, energy policy, it's cap and trade and support for these major federal pieces of legislation?
I don't think so. I frankly think it's a good choice. I think both would represent Ohio well. Both are not hardcore ideologues. Both have a record of trying to work with the other side to get things done. And I think you're right on as far as positions they take, they're not so dissimilar. However, once they get in the Senate, you know, they're expected to take caucus positions that might not even align with their own viewpoints.
You see that with Senator Brown in Massachusetts already making enemies because he's going to apparently vote for the financial reform, even though the Tea Partiers in Massachusetts are a little upset.
What's interesting about the Fisher-Portman race is that they're both portraying themselves as the non-incumbent. Mm-hmm. It's an open race. However, or not necessarily non-incumbent, but the outsider. Mm-hmm. You know, they're kind of trying to capitalize on this anti-incumbent sentiment among the voters. So I just find it kind of funny because they've both been in politics for a long time. I mean, Lee Fisher's been around since, you know, he was AG in 1990 and mm-hmm. And Portman was in Congress for a long time and served as the White House budget director as well as U.S. Trade Representative. So it's just sort of funny to hear them kind of portray themselves as the new kids on the block.
You say, Joey, we won't see Rob Portman in a tie in his own ads, but we'll see him with President Bush in the attack ads against him, I guess, from Lee Fisher and the Democrats.
Oh, yeah. And there'll be no hint of George W. Bush in Ohio to campaign for Rob Portman or any other Republican. But yeah, the you know, Bush is still not very highly regarded, even by his own party. And so the Fisher, when Lee Fisher gets enough money to put ads on TV, we're certainly going to see George Bush in them.
A lot of Republicans are upset by the spending that happened during the Bush administration, and Rob Portman was the budget director for it, George W. Bush. Does he energize Republicans to, you know, the fiscally conservative Tea Party-leaning Republicans?
Maybe not. I talked to a couple of national Tea Partiers who were in the state last week to try and organize and get the feel for what's going on, and they were they were very wary of supporting Rob Portman because of his ties to Bush and the big spending that occurred during Bush's administration.
Do you see them? They're not going to vote for Lee Fisher, though.
No.
No.
So the best they might, for Lee Fisher's standpoint, they might stay home.
Yeah, I think the key to this election is not whether Republicans are going to be energized. I think they will be, and I think they'll, you know, their turnout is pretty much a given. For Democrats, though, they need something to spark their base to get them out, and I haven't seen that yet. And obviously, independents will decide the election. And right now, they're swinging. I think the polls show they're swinging more toward the Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Do we expect to see Barack Obama campaigning for Ted Strickland here? We just mentioned that Newt Gingrich is going to be here for John Kasich. And Barack Obama's approval rating in Ohio is below 50. I think it's like 45-47%, somewhere in there, similar to what he faces nationally.
Well, I think I've talked to both the Strickland and the Fisher campaigns, and they'd love to see Barack Obama here because he still can energize the Democratic base and help get the partisans excited.
Laura, what do you make of the Tea Party in Ohio? The Quinnipiac poll, 30% view them favorable, 30% unfavorable, and 30% don't know enough.
Well, it looks like they're...
It's like 90% don't know enough.
90%, yeah. I think that the Tea Party is going to have an influence on the elections this year. It's going to pull people a little bit to the right. But I don't know if they're organized enough to really, you know, push a candidate way to the right. You know, like I don't think Portman's going to move to the right to appease the Tea Party people, and I think that Kasich is already firmly positioned where he wants to be as an anti-tax guy and a fiscal conservative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get the sense that the Tea Party is still struggling to gain an identity and coalesce around issues. I mean, you talk to all of the Tea Partiers, and they're all for smaller government and less government intrusion and less spending. And yet the base of the Tea Party tends to be older white guys like me who are approaching Social Security and Medicare, mm-hmm. you know. And so that kind of spending is all right. It's like so many of us. We're against government spending unless it's for a program that benefits us.
But the Tea Party in other states is more of a force than it is here in Ohio. Why do you think that they haven't really caught on as much as they have in other states?
Just because I think that Ohio is kind of a sensible centrist state. I mean, right now we are right of center, but we never veered too far. We do not reward ideologues from either party in statewide races, and I don't see that happening now.
Laura, the congressional races. James Carville on ABC yesterday had a great quote. He said, we have a three-pronged strategy. Democrats have a three-pronged strategy for winning the House or maintaining control of the House. The Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
Well, they're going to need a few prayers. Like in the 3rd District over in Dayton, they had a special election yesterday. Mm-hmm. Only 1% of Democratic voters turned out for the special primary. That does not indicate that Democrats are very energized mm-hmm. for the general election against Republican Mike Turner.
Is there a chance, Joe, that these races could get lost with the Kasich-Strickland race really heating up? And I mean, you have Mary Jo Kilroy and Steve Stivers again.
Yeah, in that race, there's going to be too much money in it for it to get lost. Both uh-huh. national parties are gonna fight like crazy for that seat because it's one of the top 10, 15 congressional races in the country. Mm-hmm. Likewise, in Cincinnati, where Steve Driehaus is trying to hang on, that's going to be hotly contested for both parties. He's a Democrat. And so we're going to have, as usual, so much clutter on the air that people are just going to want to turn off their TV sets.
Kind of makes us public broadcasters want to turn on our public broadcasting license and collect some of that campaign ad money for a couple of months.
Wouldn't have to run any fund drives for a while.
Which wouldn't be a bad thing. Thanks very much, Joe Hallett, senior editor with the Columbus Dispatch, Laura Bischoff, Statehouse reporter with the Dayton Daily News. This has been All Sides on WOSU NPR News and streaming on the web at WOSU.org.